ready.
Man, this whole society got our women looking at themselves crazy, man. Can you imagine if a dude was walking around telling him he didn't want to wear a pair of khakis because it made his dick look big, man?
For real talk.
You ain't ready for the relationship your grandmother and granddaddy had. You ready to leave your dude if he don't text you back fast enough.
All the time.
And see, that's what's so crazy to me, right? Because you can be against police brutality and not want cops to die. The two ideas ain't mutually exclusive.
Welcome to the Span Report with your host, Mr. Span.
Welcome to episode 115 of the Span Report Podcast. I'm your host, Mr. Span. And yeah, we rocking out to some old JBs, man. Hold on, man. I'm partying a little bit. Come on, rock with me now. My bad, man. I had to get in it, man. I had to get in it. That song is like 8 minutes long, and I can't play a whole 8 minute long song on this boy, but man, that shit goes. That shit goes, man. And especially in the ride, right? What's going on, everybody? Welcome to the Span Report Podcast. Of course, I'm your host, Mr. Span. And of course, this is, again, episode 115 of the report, man. What's going on with you? It's been a week since the last time I talked to y'all, man. And there's been a lot of things that have gone on over the course of the week that I kind of want to speak to, and hence episode 115, right? Right. So, it's been a lot of shit. It's been a lot of shit going on, right? And so I want to speak to some random thoughts I had. Hillary Clinton is now the presumptive nominee in the Democratic Party for their presidential nomination. So I kind of want to speak to that. Bernie Sanders refused to kind of let it go. So I'm going to speak a little bit to that. a lot of presidential politics are going to be spoken about on today's show. Not only that, it's going to be some things, some local stuff that happened here in Detroit that I kind of want to, you know, give some voice to and speak to, you know, just because that's what I do, right? That's that's what I do. So, yeah, man, but I had a couple things that I was that I went through over the course of the week, and some things that I just kind of noticed, and I felt like I wanted to talk to you guys about it, right? So one of the first things that kind of came up for me over the course of the week was the fact that, you know, I'm getting a little bit older. As a matter of fact, my birthday will be next Saturday. So the next time I do this show will actually be my birthday. And I'll be 36, right? And, you know, a lot of times I sit up and I wonder about, like, you know, I think about a lot of shit. Like, you know, I wonder what my parents were doing when they were my age around this time, right? Like when my father was 36 or when my mom was 36, like I pretty much know what my mom was doing, but my father, you know what that is. But, but like at 36, man, I kind of wonder, like, I try to think about it and maybe compare a little bit as to where I am in my life and where my parents were at the same time. Right. And one of the things that kind of like let me know that I was really getting older was like, before I shaved, like one time this week, I noticed that there was a gray hair in my beard. Yeah, gray. And I've never really had a problem with like gray hairs, nothing like that. And I noticed that, like, it was just something that kind of stuck out with me, you know, because it's like it was off. It was kind of off-putting for your boy to just notice a gray hair. There's this one solitary gray hair in my beard. So, you know, one of the things that I thought to do for that gray hair was I did what any rational young man would do who has gray hair. I put some lotion on it, man, because, you know, that whole ashy shit, I ain't really with it. You know what I'm saying? I hate having ashy knuckles and ashy ankles and stuff like that. I refuse to have an ashy beard as well, man. So I put a little lotion on it, and, you know, it went away. It went away, man. So that's my cure for gray hairs, fellas. If you got gray hairs and whatnot, man, don't worry about it. Put a little bit of lotion on it. You will be fine, man. Just a little ashiness, man. Don't worry about it. Just moisturize that shit up. Be just fine, man. Real talk. But, yeah, man, it's something, you know, like I said, I want to talk a bit about, like, the presidential politics and all that other stuff. But I'm forgetting some shit. I'm forgetting that I need to tell you guys how to get in touch with me here at the Spare Report and let your voice be heard. You can hit me up at the hotline at area code 313-288-0485. Leave me those voicemail messages. Of course, I'll play those messages here on the show and you can respond in kind. Also, you can email me here at feedback@thesparereport.com. The email address is feedback@thesparereport.com. Send me those emails and I will read those emails here on the show. And of course, I'll respond to those emails here on the show as well. You can also follow me on Twitter and Instagram. My name on both of those platforms is Mr_Span. Mr_Span. Follow me there. We could chop it up throughout the week, talk about whatever it is y'all want to talk about until I get tired of talking about it, right? Because that tends to happen, man. Sometimes people don't want to let certain things go. And I'm just like, all right, man, I'm over it. I'm over it. So, yeah, follow me on Twitter and Instagram. You can also like the Mr. Span fan page on Facebook, man. And as a matter of fact, I was actually kind of tweaking around with the idea of doing the Span Report live on Facebook, right? Because Facebook does have the new live feature, right? And they have it available for your phones, not necessarily for your desktops. And I came up with, I found a program that would allow me to stream on Facebook, but I was getting a lot of feedback and echoing and whatnot, so I got to get that shit fine-tuned. But pretty soon, the Span Report will be available on Facebook Live as well. But you can subscribe to the Span Report here on Spreecast. You can go to Spreecast.com, type in the Span Report, and you can see you can subscribe to the show on Spreecast. You can get an email alert when I go live so that you never miss a show live. You can participate in the chat rooms over here at Spreecast. So it's a lot of things you can do here at Spreecast to help you be a part of the show as well. And for all of your Span Report needs, go to www.thesparereport.com. All of the videos are available there that I use on the show. All of the podcasts are available there on the show. You can leave comments. You can vote in the polls on the show, man. Everything is available at thesparereport.com. You can also donate at www.thesparereport.com. And whatever you can give, it helps immensely, right? Right? So, yeah. Got that out the way. Got the business out of the way, right? So, excuse me. One of the things I was thinking about, because I was you know perusing social media and stuff like that, and I came across this video of Bernie Sanders, right? It was a Bernie Sanders video where they were pretty much just kind of like, you know, they're Bernie Sanders fans. And I have to say, Bernie Sanders fans are a very loyal bunch. They're a very passionate bunch. And if it were for Bernie Sanders support songs, Bernie Sanders would be the motherfucking president of the United States. Like, bar none, Bernie Sanders has the, like, the flyest fucking support songs, right? So I came across this song, and I want to play it for you guys now, man. This shit is awesome. Real talk, this shit is awesome. You are now listening to the hottest producer with the hottest beats on the net. Swag Star Hits.
We're taking this all the way to the basement. I guess so. I'm feeling the burn. Are you feeling the burn?
When we stand together, there is nothing, nothing, nothing we cannot accomplish. Let's do it. Thank you.
Sanders. Breaking laws, talking slander. We don't know where that shit landed. Being balls in the slammer. Clinton's not fit for commander. Black people matter. White people love Bernie Sanders. Blind and coach with the staffers. Tons of haters, tons of backers. Black people matter. White people crackers. Want them low taxes. Gotta vote glasses. No other offer can match us. He's calling for dollar for classes. Rich people funding the masses. Double Clinton, she's a fascist. Breaking laws, talking slander. We don't know where that shit landed. Beyond balls in a slammer. Clinton's not fit for commander. Black people matter. White people love Bernie Sanders. Blind and coach with the staffers. Tons of haters, tons of backers. Black people matter. White people crackers. Want them low taxes. Gotta vote glasses. No other offer can matches. He's calling for dollar for classes. Rich people running the masses. Double Clinton, she's a fascist. Hey. Sanders. Breaking laws, talking slander. We all know where that shit's gonna land her. Being balls in the slammer. Take all the evidence that she's tampering. So much it's evident. They be asking about how she's so negligent. Private server, they searching what's left of it. Has a person that's meant to be president been such a detriment? Benghazi, scandal. Enemies killed him like Rambo. Called her up on the damn piece of Hillary. They outmatch us once you answer the killers. Please give the backup. We've been after militias to come attack us. We'll be staggered and fully. She headed past it, but we asked for nobody else. Mad as somebody should slap her. Wake up, you don't did it. Got him killed and said, what is the difference? How you fixing the country with this shit? They the blame cause we must all be dummies. No, you killed him, so why did you try to say that a vid from online caused a strike that came? Call a liar, liar, cause she lies away. Billy, your wife betrayed all those who died in vain. Think it's by time she pays, get it. Breaking laws, yeah, admit it. Saying sorry, can't acquit it. That's how she living. Played the card for the women. The same old fraud politician that should be convicted. Beyond bars in the prison. Hillary's making up shit and it's so inconsistent. Don't be roped into the fiction. Voting for a Clinton that isn't a hopeful decision.
Can you hear me now? All right. Now, you know what, man? That shit was hot, right? That shit was hot. And I got that video available at thespanreport.com, so you guys go check that out if and when you get the chance. But, yeah, man, if it were for the Bernie Sanders campaign songs, man, Bernie Sanders would be our fucking president. He would be the Democratic nominee for president right now. That shit go hard, right? Even though they use a lot of Donald Trump talking points in that damn, in that shit, right? There's a lot of talking points that that you would get from a Republican candidate. And I know a lot of Bernie Sanders get they hate. Well, I know a lot of black Bernie Sanders supporters hate the comparison between Bernie Sanders and Donald Trump. But they use a lot of the same shit. They use a lot of the same shit. And so, you know, it was funny, man. I was kind of thinking, I was like, you know what? You know, everybody keeps talking about Donald Trump being a plant for the Clintons to kind of like throw off the Republican party. Who's to say that Bernie Sanders wasn't a plant by the Republican party to knock off Hillary Clinton? They're using the same tactics, man. Same tactics. I don't know. It's fun to think about. It's kind of crazy to think about. And it, you know, a lot of conspiracy nuts will run amok with that. But yeah, man, I was just thinking about that. Bernie Sanders, had it been for the campaign songs, man, obviously, like, if it were up to that, he will be our next president of the United States, man. Real talk. Another thing, man, presidential. Another thing, presidential. This is going to be a real presidential show today, man. Obama was on Jimmy Kimmel over the, I think it was Thursday. It might have been Thursday. And of course, you know, Obama has done this before. He's slow jammed the news with Jimmy Kimmel and whatnot. And he did it again, man. And when Obama like does the straight man, straight face comedy, he executes so fucking well, man. Like so well. And I want to play a little bit of Obama slow jamming the news on Jimmy Kimmel, man. Here it is.
It's been an honor and a privilege to serve as your president over the past 8 years. When I first took office, our nation was facing one of the worst recessions in its history. Since then, we've added more than 14 million new jobs and lowered the unemployment rate to under 5%. Through the actions of my administration, we were able to stimulate the economy and get our country back on track.
Oh, yeah. President Obama stimulated long-term growth in both the public and the private sector. In 2008, the country wasn't feeling in the mood. It was too tired, stressed, said it had a headache. Barack lit some candles and got some silky satin sheets.
Silky satin sheets now.
Told the American people, yes, we can.
Yes, we can. It's all right. He created tons of jobs for you and me. And he's got one more left for Hillary.
As president, I'm proud of the many progressive steps our country has taken in recent years, both socially and environmentally. The United States has been a leader in developing clean energy to ensure the health of our planet for future generations. Thanks to the Affordable Care Act, an additional 20 million Americans now have access to quality health care. And same-sex couples across the country now have a constitutional right to marry. In short, climate change is real, health care is affordable, and love is love.
Commander and preach! You gotta listen to my man, Marisas. He's accomplished a lot in 8 years. Even when Congress tried to block him, he found a way in through the back door. When Republicans gave him lemons, he made so much lemonade, Beyonce started calling him Baracky with the good hair.
Baracky with the good hair. His first two terms ended in such a hurry. Wish he could go for three like my man Steph Curry.
Now, there will be no third term. I can't stay forever. Besides, Daddy's got a Hawaiian vacation booked in about 223 days. But who's counting? That being said, the American people face an important decision this fall. The entire world is watching and they look to us for stability and leadership. Now, I know some of the presidential candidates have been critical of my foreign policy. I don't want to name any names.
He's talking about Donald Trump.
But I believe it is of the utmost importance to work alongside other world leaders. That's why I signed the Iran nuclear deal. That's why we reopened diplomatic ties with Cuba. And that's why I negotiated the new trade deal called the Trans-Pacific Partnership, or TPP.
Now hold on there, Prez Dispenser. Are you saying you're down with TPP?
Yeah, you know me. Look.
All right, man. All right. That's enough of that, man. I can sit here and watch the whole thing. But of course, like I said, man, I can't play the whole thing. Like, I can't do it. Like, I'll be here all day doing that shit. But that video is available at thespanreport.com, too. So you guys can go check that out, man. But one of the things about Barack, man, that I'm going to miss is the fact that he can do these things like this. And, like, he never dropped character. He never drops character. Barack Obama does some of the best straight-face, straight-man comedy I've seen in a long time, especially for, like, politicians and shit, right? And he's executed it quite well at, like, say, for instance, the White House Correspondents' Dinner and whatnot, like, where he just, like, excoriated Donald Trump years ago, where a lot of people say, like, was Donald Trump's inspiration to run for president and shit, right? But, yeah, man, like, he didn't crack once. I'm gonna hate to see this dude leave, man. We got like 8 months more of Barack Hussein Obama as president of the United States, man. And I appreciate what he's been able to accomplish over the last 8 years and the ways in which he's been able to accomplish them. Yeah, man, you know, waxing all philosophical and shit like that. You can do that all day long, man. But like this right here is like, you know what, man, that dude cool as hell, man. And I fucked with Barack on that level, man. Real talk, man. But, yeah, man, those are some of the random things I was kind of thinking about this week, man, just that, and, you know, the gray hairs and whatnot, man, Bernie Sanders, and a lot of shit, like I said, a lot of things presidential, but, kind of switching gears a little bit, man, you know, there was this, this story about, Brock Turner, and that was kind of brought to my attention this week. Actually, it wasn't really brought to my attention this week because of this. I mean, because I've seen a whole lot of it, like all over social media, whether that be Twitter, whether that be Facebook, right? And so the story of Brock Turner, who was the Stanford University swimmer, scholarship student, he was caught sexually assaulting a woman while she was unconscious. She was drunk. She was unconscious, and he was caught by two men on top of her, and they apprehended him, at least until the police came and whatnot, right? And so Brock Turner went to trial. He was convicted of rape. He was convicted of sexual assault. And the judge in the case, his name was Judge Aaron Pesky. Or is it Pesky? Persky, I'm sorry. Judge Aaron Persky thought that it would be too much of a hindrance to his life or some shit like that. Basically, like, it would going to prison would be too much for this kid. And he only gave this dude 6 months in jail for the sexual assault. And so, rightfully so, a lot of folks are outraged, right? A lot of folks are like, yo, man, how in the fuck can this dude get away with raping a woman and only get 6 months? And so it brings about questions about how we view rape, how we view class, how we view privilege and whatnot. And there was a player, there was an ex-football player by the name of Brian Banks, I believe. And Brian Banks, he was a football player who was falsely accused of rape. He was falsely accused. He wasn't guilty of the rape at all. He spent years in jail because of it. And he spoke to the level of privilege that was being meted out or that was on display when Brock Turner only got a 6 month sentence for sexual assault. Here he is.
What was your reaction when you heard what happened to this young woman and that he got 6 months?
I was disgusted, you know, plain and simple, appalled. And I'm just Brian Banks, you know, I'm just a guy like everybody else who watches the news and we get caught up on current events. You know, I feel that the judge in this case totally mishandled this situation. And something has to be done about it. My heart goes out to the victim in this situation. I just feel that there's been a huge disservice to her. She's been completely undermined. And after going through something so horrific as what she experienced, for it all to conclude with Brock only receiving a 6 month sentence, our system has failed her. And our system has failed our society as well. It definitely boils down to privilege, but I think it's different facets of privilege. It's not just privilege by race, but it's also privilege by money. You know, what's your economical background? What's your lifestyle? What's your upbringing? The sad thing about this is that Brock was sentenced based on his lifestyle, based on his upbringing. And because of that, the conclusion was prison would have a negative impact on him. But what about the children I'm often talking about who have no choice into where they're born and who they're born to? And they may not have a fit parent. And they grow up in a bad neighborhood. And they don't get a fair education. And somewhere down the line, they end up committing a crime. And when they stand in front of that judge, that judge sees all the negative. That's all they see when they do this.
Did you feel like that?
A young kid from. I felt like that and even less. The fact that I was there for something that I didn't even do and that no one paid any mind to even pay attention and try and find out the facts, I was pushed along through court as if I didn't even exist.
All right. Now, you know, like I've spoken a lot about, you know, rape culture, you know, male privilege, so to speak. And, you know, and I've spoken about it quite a bit in regards to Bill Cosby. Right. And we talked about how, you know, there's a lot of support for Bill Cosby in that, you know, there's still a lot of folks who are skeptical of the fact that Bill Cosby was could be capable of sexually assaulting over 50 women. Right. And I caught a lot of people like just not really trying to hear it from me. Right. They just wasn't really trying to hear me speaking about Bill Cosby in that way. And we talked about it like that. Right. But in this instance, man, like. I don't want to make this about Bill Cosby. I really just kind of want to weave this into the larger discussion as to how we view rape and rape culture and male privilege, right? I kind of want to talk about it in those terms a little bit. You know, the fact that this kid only got 6 months, and I'm calling him a kid, but like this is college. This man got 6 months in prison. I can say with fair certainty that had he been a black man, that he wouldn't have gotten a 6 month sentence for sexual assault, and he would have probably been put under the jail, and he would have been put in general population or however they decide they want, whatever they decide to do with sexual offenders. Right. I think I'm fairly confident in knowing that if he was black, that he would probably be put under the jail. Right. And I'm also a little bit concerned at the fact that this judge was more concerned about the well-being of the dude who was actually accused of and convicted of the sexual assault, as opposed to being more concerned with the victim and how the victim had to deal with that and how the victim would receive that information. Like, he was more concerned about what impact this would have on the dude who actually perpetrated the crime. This would have, putting him in prison for any length of time would have a really bad effect on him. He comes from a really good family. He comes from a place of means. He comes from, he goes to a really, really good school, an expensive school. He has a support system. And it speaks to the lack of concern, the lack of awareness that a lot of, not only men, well, yeah, but not a lot of men, but white men have when it comes to situations where, you know, they don't necessarily have to deal. They don't necessarily have to deal. It speaks a lot to that, right? There's white male privilege, there's class privilege, there's privilege dripping all over this motherfucker, right? And so the reason why I'm talking about this, not that I wasn't going to talk about this before, because I was, but I got kind of called out. I got called out on this particular topic because a few friends of mine were hitting me up. And we're like, yo, Span, I haven't seen you saying anything about this. I haven't seen you posting on Twitter. I haven't seen you posting on Facebook. Anything about this Brock Turner dude. You need to, like, go in, dude. Like, what? You need to go in on this dude. The same way you was going in on Bill Cosby, dude. You need to be going in on this cat right here, right? And I understand what they're trying to say. But I don't think they ever really understood what I've been saying the entire time. And what I really want people to understand is that I really want you to be consistent. I want you to be consistent in this, right? So when it came to Bill Cosby had over 50 allegations against him. 50 women came forward to say he had done something to them. And there were a contingent of folks, some of them my friends, some of them folks I know, some of them I listen to as podcasters, right? A contingent of folks who believe that Bill Cosby was the victim of some conspiracy because he was trying to buy NBC. And that these women were only out for the monies that they could receive by coming forward and saying that Bill Cosby had done something to them, right? That was a fairly common line of thinking for a lot of folks, that Bill Cosby couldn't have possibly done all of these things to these women over the course of the years, right? This was a common thing. And part of the ways in which they defended Bill Cosby was they talked about how Bill Cosby was a philanthropist and Bill Cosby inspired them to go to black colleges and Bill Cosby gave us the Cosby Show. And, you know, it gave us a positive view on how to talk about and look at the black family. And so they used that to defend Bill Cosby, right? In much the same way that this judge used this kid's upbringing to give him a lighter sentence on sexually assaulting a woman, right? And so one of the things that I really want to get across to a lot of folks is that as much as Brock Turner deserves the more than what's being given to him, it's not as if the world isn't condemning him, right? So I'll say this. You can't go on Twitter or Facebook and not see Brock Turner's face declaring him a flat-out racist. I mean, I'm sorry, rapist. You can't. His face is being plastered all over the place. Rightfully so. People are outraged. People are upset. People want to see justice in this case. And universally, folks are saying this dude got off way too fucking light. Universally, this is what everybody's saying. He got off way too light. Right? When it comes to Bill Cosby and you challenging me on this Brock Turner thing in relation to Bill Cosby, I want you to be consistent. I'm condemning this on all fronts. Whether that be Brock Turner, whether that be Bill Cosby, I haven't picked and chose who should be punished and who shouldn't. Bill Cosby has some very credible allegations against him by more than one victim or alleged victim. So when I talk about rape culture and how we view it, how we examine it, how we met it out, how we treat victims, there's a consistency that is lacking when it came to Brock Turner and Bill Cosby and how folks reacted to it. I'll just say that. There's a very big lack of consistency in that. And so what I would say to y'all is that, hey, y'all are now saying the same shit that I was saying 6 months ago about Bill Cosby. Y'all are now saying this about this Brock Turner dude. I was saying this 6 months ago. Brock Turner should be under the jail as well as Bill Cosby. Bill Cosby should be under the jail. Brock Turner should have his eyes plucked from his fucking head. Brock Turner should be skinned alive, set on a roof with the sun beaming on him and an alcohol drip on his eyeballs. How about giving someone some steel-toed boots and the ability to kick him repeatedly in his balls? How about we take some pliers and remove his finger and toenails from him? How about we piss on him as well? I can think of some really fucked up shit to do to somebody who does the things that Brock Turner and Bill Cosby are accused of doing. What? I'm sorry. Brock Turner was convicted of doing. But the thing of it is that I'm very consistent on this issue. So when we talk about whether or not I'm talking about Brock Turner or Bill Cosby, the reason why I don't have to say much about Brock Turner is because Brock Turner is getting it. Everybody is giving it to this dude, rightfully so. But for whatever reasons, there was a contingent of folks who just flat out refused to believe that Bill Cosby could be guilty of some of the very same things by being with the woman who was intoxicated and unable to comply or unable to consent, and he takes sexual advantage of her. Bill Cosby is accused of doing that over 50 fucking times. Brock Turner did this once, and he's getting everything that's coming to him except for the amount of jail time that he should get. But publicly, he is fucking done. Everybody knows his face. His face is being plastered all over social media. He is a pariah, rightfully so. But he doesn't have the same level of people defending him in the ways that I saw people that I love, know, and respect defending Bill Cosby. So when I talk about this issue, man, Brock Turner was a quintessential example of privilege, of means, of access. Bill Cosby, even in his blackness, has some of the same advantages that Brock Turner had. And his blackness doesn't shield him from that. He's been able to kind of amass a bit of a following to where he can exert some of the same influence and power, right? So I want you guys to be consistent. I want y'all to be consistent when we talk about this issue. That's really all I ask, is we be consistent when we talk about rape and rape culture and how it manifests itself in America, how it manifests itself in our own communities and in with the people that we know. I want y'all to be consistent. And yeah, that's all I got to say about that, man. Real talk. But yeah, man, some other stuff happened. Some other stuff happened over the course of the week, man. As a matter of fact, it was last Friday that we lost boxing great Muhammad Ali. And I spoke about this last week on the show. And it was about the fact that, you know, when I talked about it, it was fresh. I kind of talked about when the story came out, like I was sleeping in front of my couch and, you know, dreaming about it. And then my wife telling me it was a real thing and whatnot. And so, like, over the course of the week, man, we've gotten a lot of folks who want to give tribute to Muhammad Ali, who want to talk about what Muhammad Ali meant to them and how Muhammad Ali affected their lives and whatnot. And one of the things that I thought was very interesting over the course of this week was, you know, when it came to white folks and when white folks were talking about Muhammad Ali, they had a penchant to talk about how Muhammad Ali transcended race. And, excuse me, the funny thing about that to me is this, is that, you know, when it comes to black people being great or being world renowned for the things that they do, when it comes to us, for white folks, they feel as if in order to give us credit for that sort of thing, they have to discount or erase the fact that the person that they're giving praise right now is black, right? There's like this, I don't even know if they're necessarily conscious of it all the time, but there's this effort that is given to erase the fact that, you know, great people of color or black people who do great things, there's an effort to erase that, right? And so over the course of the week, man, like I was at work one day and I was listening to the like sports talk radio, and there was a local radio show host here named Pat Caputo who talked about Muhammad Ali transcended race because how much he loved Muhammad Ali and things like that. And Chris Myers, I think he's still with Fox Sports. I remember Chris Myers back in the day. I believe he used to be a part of, was it Best Damn Sports Show period or some shit like that? I know he was on Fox Sports for a long time, right? But Chris Myers went to Twitter, and Chris Myers wrote this. He said, "When you saw Ali, you didn't see color and you didn't see religion. You saw a gentle man who was a strong fighter, a champion you could believe in," right? And you know, Twitter wasn't having that shit. We like a lot of folks, man. A lot of folks went in on that shit, man. Like, and one of the things is interesting is how, again, they have to not acknowledge his race in connection with his greatness, right? So Muhammad Ali changed his name because at the time he had joined the Nation of Islam, and they were they were about the practice of changing the names because you didn't know what your original name would have been. You didn't know the original people that you came from. So the names that we were given to us through our slave masters. And so Muhammad Ali's changing of his name was a rejection of white oppression. Every time you said his name, Muhammad Ali, it was a rejection of the oppression of white folks. His religion at the time was an affront to white folks. Let's make no mistake, man. A lot of white folks in America in the 1960s had no clue what Islam was. They thought the Nation of Islam was a cult, and a lot of folks still do. But he wasn't espousing the same Judeo-Christian ethics that a lot of them were used to from sports icons, from their athletes, from their people in pop culture. They weren't used to this. This was a total rejection of everything white at that time. So for Chris Myers to say that when you saw Muhammad Ali, you didn't see he transcended race, you didn't see color, and you didn't see religion, it's like, hold on, bruh. Like, his name and his religion were at the time straight up affronts to what whiteness was. Let's make no mistake about that. And so it's one of those things, man, like when whiteness, when white folks want to, you know, be effusive in their praise of us, man, like we start seeing it. They really want to separate us from our race and who we are, even though they've kept us marginalized for large parts of, you know, our history and whatnot. But they really want to separate us from, you're special, Negro. You're so special in your Negroness that we don't even see the fact that you're black anymore. You're special. You're not black. You're human, right? This is what they do. So we saw this with Prince. We saw this with Prince when Prince died, where there was a concerted effort to make sure that people had this in their head that Prince was multiracial, that he was mixed. And yeah, he was fair-skinned, but he wasn't mixed. Both of his parents was black. Both of his parents was black. He was not a multiracial. He wasn't a biracial dude. He was black. And we see this happen with our greats, where they start talking about how they transcended race. And I started thinking, man, like, yo, who are the white people who transcend race that when they die, we don't see their color no more? Who are these white folks that when they die, and even if they're like widely accepted, even by black folks, like white black folks have embraced them to the point that, you know, they're not even white no more. That doesn't happen. Right? That doesn't happen. Like, say, for instance, you could talk about, say, Tina Marie. Right? Tina Marie, who used to sing with Rick James and whatnot. Tina Marie had a very soulful voice. She spoke, she sang with Rick James and whatnot. A lot of black folks loved her. Right? We do the same thing kind of with Eminem. I know a lot of people kind of, you know, with Eminem, they kind of stiff arm him a little bit. But when it comes to Eminem's skill as an MC, people respect it. People embrace him for that. Right? But we never lose sight of the fact that these people are white. And we never try to say that those folks aren't white. They're white. We embrace them, but they're still white. And so it's funny to see white folks like kind of fall over themselves to say that, yo, this dude transcended race so much. Like, he was so good at who he was and what he did that I didn't even think he was black no more. And that's pretty much what you're saying to a lot of folks, that his blackness was a problem. And so because his blackness was a problem, that you had to like not see it no more in order to give this dude praise. And that's fucked up. And it's why so many people got on Twitter, got on Facebook, got on Snapchat, got on all of the social medias and said, yo, man, you're talking some bullshit right now. You're talking some bullshit and we're not hearing it. We're not hearing it. So, yeah, man, it's funny, man. And another thing, too, that I thought was interesting was as I was listening to sports talk radio, and there was a lot of white folks, and I kind of appreciate some of these white folks, right? The open racist, or the racist who say racist shit but don't recognize what they're saying is racist. But I can appreciate when, like, say, for instance, a racist is just like flat out with his shit and you know where he stands and you're like, okay, I can respect that. You're not going to smile in my face and then do some fuck shit behind my back. You just like, yo, man, I don't fuck with you. And I can respect that to a degree, right? But when it comes to, like, you know, a lot of white folks, especially people who grew up during the Vietnam era, where we talked about, who got sent to war and who didn't. There's a lot of white folks who have some resentment against Muhammad Ali because he didn't go to that war. And I listened to Vietnam War veterans talk about how they thought Muhammad Ali was a coward for not going over to Vietnam, how they thought that he was using his religion as a way to get out of going and fighting. And they also talked about how the United States was the reason that Muhammad Ali became great. You know, that he had been given an opportunity to go to the Olympic Games and win a gold medal because of America. That he was able to make millions of dollars during his sport, or like being great at his sport, because he was in America. You know, they really tried to pump that up, and they couldn't understand why a black man wouldn't want to fight for a country who wouldn't seat him at the same lunch counter and treat him as a regular human being, or that someone who would come home and be treated to a hero's welcome in much the same way that a lot of white veterans came home to those hero's welcomes. You know, like, they couldn't understand why a black man who didn't feel as if he was a part of this country wholly would not want to go to a foreign land and go fight for the country that doesn't really treat him all that well either. So, you know, it's funny, man. And a lot of it comes from a lot of conservative slants. And, like, I can kind of think off the top of my head of, like, you know, Republican or conservative-leaning politicians and talking heads who would talk about going to wars and stuff like that. And then you look back at the Vietnam era and they never went at all for whatever reasons, whether that be for their religious reasons, whether that be for their schooling, whether that be for health reasons they came up with. Like, I could think of like Newt Gingrich didn't go, Rush Limbaugh didn't go, Dick Cheney didn't go, Donald Trump's bitch ass didn't go. Like, all of these people did not go to the Vietnam War. And they found reasons not to go. But then all of a sudden, a lot of white folks find issue with the fact that Muhammad Ali decided that, hey, I'm not going to this war. I'm not fighting these people for you. I'm not even getting the rights that are afforded to me as a human being in the United States. So I'm not going to do this for you. And a lot of white folks are having issues dealing with that, man. Real talk. But it's time for a little musical break, y'all. I got to do some business. But what I'm going to do is I'm going to leave y'all with something funky. Let's see. Leave y'all with something funky. What I got? We can go with that. Come on. Play dope. Well, we can't leave y'all with that. Let's see if it'll play now. There we go.
Hey! Got to pay back. Pay back. Revenge. I'm mad.
The big payback.
Got to get back. I need some get back.
Follow me!
right, and I'm back. Yeah, man. So, yeah, when it comes to the, like, the whole Muhammad Ali thing, man, like, can't we just appreciate that man for who he was, what he did, and not necessarily try to erase his blackness from who he was and what he did and what he represented for America, but not only just America, but Black America, because we ain't gonna let y'all forget that. We're not gonna let y'all forget that. And so I think it's prudent for a lot of white folks, man, to just kind of like stop attempting to erase blackness when it comes to great Black Americans. Like, it's just not doing anybody any service, and you come across looking like a straight up bigot, even though you may not necessarily have been trying to do so. Right. All right. Now, another thing that kind of came up over the course of the week, man, was the fact that L. Varner kind of talked about a bit about the new kind of movement when it comes to slut shaming and whatnot. And she went to Instagram to speak about it, and Twitter kind of got in her ass. A lot of people on Twitter got in her ass. Some of the people were in her Instagram. They were kind of getting in at her, you know, kind of going in on her. And, you know, she basically kind of spoke to this idea that, you know, if women want to kind of be loose and want to be provocative and whatnot, then by all means, go ahead and do it. But we should not be promoting that for young girls and school age girls to follow behind these women and do it in the, you know, follow behind in their footsteps. And she said that a lot of these women were using, you know, feminism as a way to kind of cloak what it was that they're really doing, which was being loose and being provocative and everything else, right? And so people kind of got into her shit, right? And one of the things that I noticed about this particular topic was the fact that it was a lot of dudes who were championing the fact of what, you know, they were championing L. Varner and what she had to say about this particular issue. Now, I know, like, for me, I'm not necessarily like the I can tell, man, like, I there's a few people that I know who kind of think like me, right? There's also a lot of people who don't. And so when you start talking about this particular issue when it comes to slut shaming and respectability and whatnot, you'll find that I'm in the minority in this line of thinking. Right? I'm just flat out in the minority in this. And I can understand that. I can understand why that is. But at the same time, it doesn't make it any less frustrating, right? So one of the things about this whole thing about slut shaming, or this anti-slut shaming movement, that I think needs to be understood is that I think that a lot of women are looking to define themselves, right? They're looking for the autonomy. They're looking for the agency. They're looking for ways to define themselves and not be defined by others, right? And when it comes to what they wear and how we are to perceive them, I think there's a bit of a pushback on how we perceive women who dress a certain way or who speak a certain way, right? There's a pushback on this. And for a lot of folks, they're looking at it from the social norms, like, okay, this is how we've been rocking for X amount of years. Like, why are we changing this? And why are you trying to rock the boat? Like, yo, you should just kind of conform to how we like doing this and how it's been for as long as we've been doing it, right? There's a lot of trying to get these women to conform. Like, hey, this is what we do. This is how we've been doing it. You will do this way, or we're going to treat you a certain way, right? And so I think what this is really when it comes to this anti-slut shaming, you know, movement is they're looking for their own autonomy. They're looking to define themselves. They're not looking to allow anyone else to define them for them, right? And so a lot of men stand to benefit from keeping the status quo. A lot of men stand to benefit from keeping the status quo. So when we talk about, you know, whether a woman is modestly dressed or whether or not she's uncovered, a lot of it is basically spoke about in the scope of how men will or should react to it, right? And so we talk about how girls, like even young girls, man, we talk about how young girls are dressed and how that can be a distraction for young men in the classroom, right? We never talk about how young men dress and how that can be a distraction for young girls in a classroom. We just don't talk about it. It's not a topic of discussion, right? We kind of talk about these topics when it comes to slut shaming and you know, policing what women wear and where they're allowed to go and things like that. A lot of times we talk about this in terms where we've kind of accepted the notion that a lot of men can't control themselves, right? Now, I got into this discussion with a friend of mine over the course of the week on Facebook, and we kind of talked a bit about this, and I tapped out of that conversation because I don't think he was really getting it, right? We kind of talked about this and the fact that there's a lot of times where, because we are the privileged class, you know, in this case being men, we aren't necessarily aware of some of the things that these women are trying to tell us, and we just simply aren't listening, or we don't want to listen because it benefits us to keep shit the way that it's been, right? So when it comes to this like anti-slut shaming movement, I don't necessarily think it's about sex equaling power. It's about the power to choose to define oneself. That no matter what I got on, it doesn't make me what you might necessarily want to, you know, attribute to me, right? So during this thread, we were talking about, you know, whether or not, you know, women wanting to whether or not sex equals power and whatnot. And while we were having this conversation, a dude kind of posted a picture of this young woman who had on, like, you know, a halter top and some really short shorts. And he talked about her being a teacher. And he's like, you know, but she's a teacher, though. And it's like, so are we not to respect her occupation as a teacher because of how she chooses to dress in her off time? So now she is not deserving of respect because she chooses to dress a certain way in her off time? So, like, we try to make these rationalizations that people deserve to not be respected because of the way that they dress or the way that they feel or the way that they respect themselves. Right? Because we've been taught all the time, man, that there are certain ways in which you have to be respectable in order for us, like, we just conform to these social norms, not really thinking about why we conform to these social norms. And I get it, for a lot of men, I know a lot of brothers don't get it. I know a lot of dudes just don't get it. They can't wrap their heads around it. Why? Because for all our lives, we've been taught a certain way, right? We've been taught that to a large degree, man, like, you know, women are for us. By and large, women are for us. Women are to be supportive of us. Women are to be for our pleasure. Women ought to be happy that we're showing them any attention, right? Now, some dudes may be listening to this right now, be like, yo, Span tripping. But then you think about how many times a woman has said that she got called out of her name because she didn't want to show interest to a dude that she didn't really like. Or you think about the times that a dude has reached out and touched a woman or grabbed a woman by her arm to try to talk to her, and she's like, yo, man, leave me the fuck alone. Or you think about the times that young girls are sent home from school because she might have had a spaghetti strap shirt on and some shorts or whatever, and the dudes in her class can't pay attention to what's going on in class, right? So the whole thing of male behavior is put on the shoulders of young girls and women because we've pretty much given up on the notion of men being able to control themselves. We've given up on that notion. A lot of dudes have. And we promote it. We promote it. When we talk about, say, for instance, if a young girl is raped and folks want to know, like, well, you see what she had on? As if that is somehow an excuse for why what happened to her happened to her. No, that motherfucker raped her. He took something that didn't belong to him. He invaded her privacy. He invaded her space. He violated her body. Fuck what she had on. The responsibility lies with him and his actions, not what she had on. So I get it, man. Like, for a lot of dudes, it takes a while to kind of like wrap your mind around the fact that, yo, for all your life, you've been told that women are for you. and if they're for your pleasure, and if they're for you at your disposal, that you're entitled to them and their body. I get it. And so I wonder, because like, I take that back. I don't necessarily wonder. One of the things I know is, like, because of where I am in my life now, I don't think this entire thing will change in my lifetime. I don't, you know, the same way that, like, a lot of folks didn't think that Barack Obama would be president, or that we'd have a black president by the time they were alive or dead or whatever, I don't necessarily think that this is going to change in my lifetime. But I pray every day that sometimes, like, more brothers do get it, that we start having the, you know, these conversations with young men about how they are to respect the young woman and her agency, to where you're not entitled to get her number. If you take note of the physical cues where you can tell she's not really interested in you, where you don't call a woman out of her name because she's not interested in you, where you reach out to a woman and fill her up any sort of way because you want to, or because of what she's wearing, or that if she's raped, that is somehow her fault. I think what a lot of these women are doing are, they're demanding their humanity. And for a lot of dudes, they're having a hard time wrapping their minds around it. And so when it comes to my daughter, you know, I got to ask, you know, like, what do you tell, you know, what do you allow your daughter to wear? And, like, you know, let's keep it 100. Let's keep it a buck. It don't take a whole hell of a lot for dudes to sexualize women or young girls. We've done it with, say, for instance, young schoolgirl uniforms. That's a fetish for a lot of people. You see porns where, like, you know, now, you know, they're fucking young schoolgirl. She's got on a dress and a blouse and the high socks and the shoes, and people get off on that. My daughter is pretty developed right now at 13. And months ago, I was telling y'all about going to Subway and this dude eyeballing my daughter as she's trying to find out what the fuck it is she wants to eat. She can be in a t-shirt and some jeans, and some dude will somehow find a way to sexualize her. So I really want dudes to kind of understand when I speak on this, man, I'm again trying to be consistent. But when it comes to L. Varner speaking on this, because I know I kind of got away from that, but when it comes to L. Varner on this, man, I'm like, I can't agree. She doesn't have a point. I don't think this is something that they're trying to teach children to be provocative or to be over the top or to be sexualized in any manner. I don't think that's what they're teaching young girls. I think they're asking for the ability to define themselves. That's it. And to be respected as people. That's it. It should not be that hard a concept. But for a lot of folks, who have been conditioned by the social norm, it's a hard thing to wrap your mind around, right? So, yeah, man, we could talk about this ad nauseum, and I'm pretty sure at some point in time I'll speak about this again. But when it comes to women and their autonomy and their agency and whatnot, man, I'm a big advocate for it. I, you know, at the end of the day, I know I talked to my daughter about, you know, what it is to wear and what it is to, you know, how to conduct yourself in certain situations and whatnot. But I do that not because I'm searching for her to be able to demand respect. No, I'm doing it in large part because I know this conversation isn't being had on the other end, because we're not having the same conversation with young men. We're just not. And so as a way to protect her from that, I have to have these conversations with her about that, right? So yeah, man. Yeah, but yeah, it's time to switch gears yet again. We're getting back into this these presidential politics, man. And as of right now, Hillary Clinton is the presumptive Democratic nominee for president of the United States, right? And I know a lot of Bernie Sanders fans are pissed about it, right? Now, okay, if you've been listening to this show for any length of time, you know I've been very critical of Bernie Sanders and a lot of his supporters. And part of the reason why is because I take umbrage at the fact that some of them just flat out don't understand the process. And because they don't understand the process, they deem the process rigged against their candidate. And they don't necessarily have the understanding of the history of the party and how things have played out on their side, right? So, you know, Hillary Clinton was deemed the presumptive Democratic nominee a day before the Tuesday primaries that were held this week, right? The Associated Press had talked to a number of superdelegates, and they also took into account the fact that Hillary Clinton had an overwhelming number of pledged delegates from the previous primaries that she'd won, right? And so a lot of, you know, Bernie Sanders, you know, supporters cried foul. Like, you know, we haven't had our primaries yet. Like, you know, how are y'all calling this now and stuff like that? And, you know, one of the things that I found interesting, man, was the fact that, you know, for a long time, Bernie Sanders decried superdelegates as being undemocratic and that they were corrupt and that they were an impediment to the process, right? And a lot of his supporters kind of like they bought into it. They bought it and they agree, right? But at the same time, he's feeling as if he can flip those superdelegates in his favor to show that he is a stronger candidate against Donald Trump, right? And it's a bit hypocritical to me. And I've said this a couple times before. It's a bit hypocritical to me because if you really believe that the Democratic superdelegate process was undemocratic, then wouldn't it be undemocratic for them to ignore the fact that you lost in the popular vote, that you lost in the number of primaries that you've won, that you lost in the pledged delegate count as well, and then they would still give it to you because through polling, you see that you are a stronger candidate, quote unquote, stronger candidate than Hillary Clinton against Donald Trump? It would be a little bit undemocratic. It would be a bit against the will of the people who voted overwhelmingly for Hillary Clinton, right? Hillary Clinton at this particular point right now has a 3,720,351 vote lead on Bernie Sanders in the popular vote for the Democratic primary, right? Now, to give you some perspective, in 2008, when Hillary Clinton was going against President Barack Obama, or then Senator Obama at the time, the vote count at that particular time in 2008 was razor thin. Barack Obama had won the popular vote by a total of 41,622, right? Now, Hillary Clinton had won 23 primaries. Barack Obama had won like 32. Hillary Clinton had like 280 superdelegates. Barack Obama had 394. Barack Obama had 2,158 delegates, and Hillary Clinton had 1,920. Very close race. Very close race in 2008. Not as close in 2016. So Hillary Clinton right now has 2,216 delegates to Bernie Sanders' 1,835, right? Super delegates. Hillary Clinton has 571. Bernie Sanders has 48, right? And she's won 28 primaries. I think he's won like 21 or 22. But that number of the popular vote, where over 3 million, close to 4 million people have decided to vote for Hillary Clinton as opposed to voting for Bernie Sanders, I think is a pretty overwhelming number. On top of the overwhelming superdelegates, on top of the fact that she's won more primaries. So this idea that Bernie Sanders is going to take it to the convention and this is going to be a contested nomination, when it's not even really close. It's not even close. I think that's, you know, like, it's delusional to kind of keep telling your supporters that, like, they have a shot, right? And you can say that, you know, like, these superdelegates, they decided who they were going to back before, you know, there were superdelegates that had decided they were going to back Hillary Clinton before anyone else got into the race. And it's like, hold up, dude, you forget, and we don't forget, that you decided that you were going to run as a Democrat but you had been an independent. You weren't really a member of their party until you decided to run for president. So now all of a sudden you've been talking shit about all these superdelegates this entire process, and you need them now. And now you feel like you're going to flip them? Come on, bruh. And if they don't flip, you tell your supporters that the process is rigged. It's a coronation. Nah, dude. The process is playing out. This is the process that you agreed to. So, you know, like, again, man, like, the math that matters is the fact. The math that matters. Like, you can talk about the polls of Bernie Sanders being a stronger candidate against Donald Trump. But the numbers that matter are the ones that happen in the voting booth. And those are the results in the superdelegates, in the pledged delegates, in the primary wins. What happens in that voting booth, not what happens at the rallies where you got thousands of people at your rallies, not what happens in the polling where people are able to say whatever the fuck it is that they want to say over the phone. None of that matters. What matters is what happens in that voting booth. And so I think, you know, one of the biggest things about Bernie Sanders, man, I've never really been able to connect with his candidacy was because I didn't believe in him. I think he was doing what was politically expedient. Even Hillary Clinton, to a large degree, does a lot of shit that is politically expedient. But at least I know what it is, right? I know why she's doing it. This here just seems totally self-serving. Totally self-serving. To the fact that, like, you're saying, fuck the numbers and what we're looking at right now. I'm going to do this way. I'm going to contest this convention. I'm going to not bow out. I'm going to say that the process was rigged. I'm going to get all of these millions of people to also believe that this process is rigged. And then all of those folks who are Bernie Sanders supporters, who look at Hillary Clinton supporters and say that they're being brainwashed, they want the status quo, that they voted for an establishment and everything else. Like, yo, y'all forget that the establishment rejected Hillary Clinton in 2008. They went with Barack Obama in 08. See, that's how this works, man. If you understand how the process works, then a lot of this shit won't surprise you. And a lot of this stuff you'll find out isn't rigged at all. It's just how this shit plays out. So, yeah, man, I'm kind of glad that that shit is over. I'm glad that shit is over. And I'm glad that we're kind of moving on. We're getting closer towards the general election, and this whole presidential politics shit will be over and done with, right? Because I'm a little tired. I'm a little weary of the whole shit, but it kind of is what it is, right? But we've come to our segments, and now we're up to our champ of the week. So let me get the champ music. All right, now, the Span Report champ of the week this week is Elizabeth Warren. And, yeah, man, Elizabeth Warren spoke in front of a Democratic, I don't know, shit, I'm drawing a blank, and I should have had this shit written down. She spoke in front of a Democratic group, right? And it was a time where, like, it was a 30-minute speech, but she spent a large portion of that speech kind of framing the candidacy of Donald Trump. And I gotta say that this has got to be the most etherific excoriation of a presidential candidate that I've heard in a long time that didn't include curse words. Right? So I'm gonna play some highlights of Elizabeth Warren talking shit about that boy Donald Trump. Check it out.
Is a loud, nasty, thin-skinned fraud who has never risked anything for anyone and who serves no one but himself. Donald Trump says Judge Curiel should be ashamed of himself. No, Donald, you should be ashamed of yourself. ashamed for using the megaphone of a presidential campaign to attack a judge's character and integrity simply because you think you have some God-given right to steal people's money and get away with it. You shame yourself and you shame this great country. You just can't make this stuff up.
All right. And for that excoriation, man, Elizabeth Warren is the Spam Report podcast champ of the week this week, man. Real talk. But we got our ass hat of the week this week as well.
Yo, we got some hats now, motherfuckers.
And the ass hat of the week this week, man, is unfortunately the Wayne County prosecutor, Kim Worthy. Right? Now, Kim Worthy gets the ass hat of the week this week because there was a story of this kid named Devontae Sanford. He was 14 years old, and he was railroaded into confessing to murdering four people in Detroit about 8 years ago, nine years ago, right? And so Devontae Sanford was released this week, sometime this week, and after he had spent 8 years in prison for a murder or four murders that he didn't commit, right? And this is after he, that's the thing that's really pressing about this entire thing, is that years ago there was a hitman in Detroit who is also he's a confessed killer, confessed to a lot of murders, who actually confessed to those murders that Devontae Sanford had been convicted of, and yet Devontae Sanford sat in prison for 8 years of those murders. Here is Kim Worthy defending the fact that she convicted and was able to get a conviction and didn't, you know, advocate for the release of Devontae Sanford.
With that breaking news now on the prosecutor's story in the case of Devontae Sanford, he became a free man yesterday after serving 8 years in prison on a wrongful conviction. Prosecutor Kim Worthy just spoke to reporters. 7 Action News reporter Anu Prakash is live downtown to tell us why the prosecutor is standing by her decision in the case. Anu.
Well, Joanne, Wayne County Prosecutor Kim Worthy says that it was just as of May 20th of this year that she says she got information that called into question the conviction of Devontae Sanford. Now, he was just 14 when he was arrested and later confessed and pled guilty to four murders at a Detroit drug house on Runyon Street. Now, almost 9 years later, his conviction was vacated and he was released yesterday following an independent investigation done by Michigan State Police. Now, supporters of Devontae have long questioned why Vincent Smothers, a professional hitman who confessed to the murders, was never charged. In a lengthy presentation this morning, the prosecutor laid out the evidence that she said did not point to Vincent Smothers at the time. She said she acted quickly after MSP found problems with the DPD police investigation into the murders, and she was pressed on why Vincent Smothers couldn't have been charged years ago instead of Devontae.
This is not a case where, as I said before, and I'm going to end on this, this is not a case where these allegations were made, they weren't followed up. I don't know what kind of, maybe it wasn't done to your satisfaction, but we did everything that we could do to follow up from those confessions. And then we had, again, the 2 years plus long hearing where the defense, as well as the prosecution, had an opportunity to call witnesses. They chose not to. They chose not to deal with, for whatever reason, that's something you have to ask them, on issues that get to the heart of some of the questions that you're talking about.
Now, one piece of evidence that Worthy said that they relied on was testimony from then DPD Deputy Chief James Tolbert, who said this drawing of the crime scene was done by Devontae Sanford on a blank piece of paper. Well, now we've learned that during the recent MSP investigation and an interview of then DPD Deputy Chief James Tolbert, he admitted to drawing the house and that Devontae just drew the bodies. And because of that, we're told now there is a warrant request being reviewed for James Tolbert for a perjury charge. Bottom line. No matter how many times she was challenged on her handling of this case, Kim Worthy insists that her office was not running rogue and trying to railroad Devante Sanford. As for the Runyon Street murders, at this point, her office is also reviewing a warrant request to charge Vincent Smothers as well as another man. It'll be interesting to see what Devante Sanford's family and his attorneys have to say, because we're expecting to hear from them later on this afternoon at 2 o'clock. Reporting live in downtown Detroit, Anu Prakash, 7 Action News.
Anu, thank you so much for the...
All right, right. So yeah, man, like, this kid sat in prison for 8 years for a murder that he didn't commit, and it was a dude who actually confessed to this murder, who they didn't want to even charge for, who wasn't even charged for. And I kind of wonder, like, where was the Making a Murderer, you know, series for Devante Sanford, right? Where was the Making a Murder series for him, right? So you have that going on, man. And, you know, there really isn't any justification for it. I know Kim Worthy did a press conference here in Detroit, and it was about a half an hour long. But there really isn't any justification for what happened to this kid, especially when you have a confessed killer, a known hitman who confessed to these murders, and you refuse to charge him or even look into it in a timely fashion, to where this kid loses 8 years of his life because of pride. A lot of times, like, when you know, it just comes across as like your pride. Like, I don't know, man. I don't know. But Devante Sanford spoke about his release, and I kind of want to play a clip of that as well.
A motion this afternoon as the family of Devante Sanford spoke publicly for the first time since the 23-year-old was released from prison after being wrongfully convicted. 7 Action News reporter Jane Park is live on Detroit's East Side, where Devante told us he never doubted he'd be free again one day. Jane?
That's right. He never doubted it. He says he knew he had to be mentally and spiritually strong while in prison. He says letters from supporters across the country helped him do that. And above all, support from his family got him through nearly a decade behind bars.
I laid in the bed this morning crying because I still don't believe he's home.
Smiles of triumph and relief on the faces of Devante Sanford's family as they surrounded the 23-year-old freed from prison this week.
That's all I really wanted, was my freedom. So from this day forward, I'm just trying to move forward and put all this behind me.
Devante Sanford was just 14 years old in 2007 when he was arrested and later convicted for a quadruple murder investigators now believe he didn't commit. He told reporters Thursday he never lost faith he would one day be exonerated. His family declined to comment on Wayne County Prosecutor Kim Worthy's defense of how she handled the case 9 years ago. But Bill Proctor, former 7 investigator and advocate for the wrongfully convicted, made this scathing criticism that officials should have done more to investigate, especially after confessed hitman Vincent Smothers admitted to the crime himself.
And this child must now struggle to survive. Make no mistake, the hour-long smoke and mirrors conversation this morning from the prosecutor is not necessarily completely true. There is no excuse for what happened to this child, and Kim Worthy bears much of the responsibility.
But Sanford's mother says she has no bitterness toward the man her son possibly took the fall for.
It took him to do the right thing to get him out. So keep him in your prayers, too. We are forever grateful for him, too.
Grateful life can finally begin again.
I know it's going to take some time for me to get back used to things and normalize, but like the hard part is over, you know? Like, the hardest part was getting me out of prison, you know?
That's it.
So I think I'll be ready for it.
Devante Sanford told us he wants to become a motivational speaker for at-risk youth, but for now he says he will be enjoying the normal things like learning how to drive and getting his driver's license. We are live on Detroit's East Side. Jane Park, 7 Action News.
Yeah. All right, man. And Godspeed to that kid, man. Real talk. Like, and I keep saying kid. That dude's like 21, 22 or something like that, man. But, you know, to lose 8 years of your life, man, for something that you didn't do, and the way in which he's handling it, the way in which he's handled this entire situation, man, is commendable, man. I don't know if I would ever, if I would have been able to handle it with the with the dignity that this dude has been able to kind of handle this entire situation, man. So I'm rooting for Devontae Sanford, man. I'm rooting for him. I hope he's able to get his life on track, man, and everything else, man. Like, I hope, you know, I only wish good things for him. You know what I mean? And unfortunately, this means that Kim Worthy is also the ass hat of the week here at the Span Report.
Yo, we got some hats now, motherfuckers.
And now for our new segment, Unpopular Black Opinion. I gotta say, I think that shit was dope as hell. What? Yeah, man. So, yeah, man, I got an unpopular black opinion right here, right now, here on the Span Report. There was a story, another Detroit story here, that kind of went viral a bit, of a mother who had received a $50,000 inheritance, or not really an inheritance, but her father had, you know, received the settlement, and he wired her $50,000. And she ran into some troubles with the bank. So I'm going to let these, you know, I'm going to let this story play out, and then I'm going to give my commentary on why it is that I don't necessarily agree with this being racist.
Store-wide discounts and markdowns.
And
up
so
to
I'm
going to
actually mute this until this damn commercial goes off. But I got to let this story play. So just a minute, folks. Boom, 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 ba-doom, ba-doom. Okay, here we go.
Tonight, imagine inheriting thousands of dollars only to be told that you can't even touch the money.
It's happening right now to a woman in Detroit. Her entire account is frozen, and now she's worried she won't be able to pay her bills. Fox News, Dave Spencer joining us live with that story. Dave.
Taryn, this single mom says her son's graduation party has been put on hold. She's not sure how long the lights will stay on at her home. The thing is, she has all the money she needs, but right now, it's worthless.
I feel like my money's being held hostage.
A mother of four has the money to support her family. She just can't get it.
Every single dime is tied up in that bank.
And her bank, Bank of America, says it's just doing things by the book in the name of protecting customers. This all started with a personal tragedy.
I had a little brother and he passed away, and my dad had a lawsuit from that.
From that lawsuit, more than $50,000 wired straight into her bank account on May 20th. The procedure, she was told, was to place a two-hour hold on the money while the bank investigates its origins. After that, it's hers to do as she pleases, and she did, withdrawing thousands just days apart without a problem.
I went to two banks before that, drew $8,000, drew $5,000, no questions, just swipe your card and enter your PIN, ma'am.
Then her car was totaled on May 24th, so she went to get another $5,000 at the branch in Dearborn.
The guy behind the counter, he started asking me where did I get the money from, and a bunch of questions. And I told him I feel like that's none of his business, so I'm going to go to another branch where I feel more comfortable.
And when she went to that second bank,
they told me my account was on hold. It has been frozen for fraud.
So Anderson started asking questions and admittedly got upset.
I feel like you guys are discriminating against me. Is it because I'm black? And then that's when she began to, I don't know exactly what she said, but she said I was being something, and then she told me to leave out the bank because I was upset. Yes, I was, because this is my funds. Why can't I receive my funds?
Since then, she claims she's been in the dark as to why. In the meantime, bills and hungry mouths are starting to mount up.
My rent is due today. I have four children. What am I supposed to do? I got to be to work tomorrow morning. I work in West Bloomfields. I have no vehicle to get there. What am I supposed to do when I haven't done anything wrong here?
Bank of America issued this statement regarding Ms. Anderson's situation. We've frozen the customer's account under the terms of our deposit agreement and disclosures. In the agreement, if at any time we believe a customer's account may be subject to irregular, unauthorized, fraudulent, or illegal activity, we may, in our discretion, freeze the funds in the account and in other accounts they maintain with us without the liability of the customer until we are able to complete our investigation of the account and transactions.
I thought I was being safe with my money going to the bank, but it seems I'm safer putting it under my mattress.
I spoke with a banking expert tonight who told me that under the Patriot Act, clerks often undergo training to spot fraudulent activity. And he also told me that it's not really cut and dry rules. A lot of times these clerks are using their training and their intuition when they decide whether or not to flag an account as fraud. Live in the newsroom, Dave Spencer, Fox 2 News.
All right. Now, as I said, this is the unpopular black opinion, right? Because I can't necessarily make the leap to this being a case of racism, right? And one of the things that, you know, like that kind of pops up, you know, in my mind is the fact that there was a lot of unusual like transactions happening on this lady's account, right? So say for instance, if you're not necessarily like you don't have this kind of traffic happening on your account, a lot of times your bank will start giving you a little bit of extra scrutiny, right? So just anecdotally, I told this story before, but there was a time once that I was buying one of my rifles, right? And at the time, that rifle cost me $2,200, right? And that was also something that was not exactly normal for me to be doing, was to go into a gun store and pay $2,200 for a rifle. And so while I was trying to get this rifle and they're swiping my card, the card kept coming back declined. Now, I know that there's money in this account to cover the cost of this rifle. So I had to get on the phone. I had to call my bank. And I had to let the bank know that, yeah, this is in fact me, and I am purchasing this rifle. And then once they did that, once I made that phone call, they went on ahead and they released those funds. They unfroze that card so that transaction can go through and that I can buy my rifle, right? But the reason that they stopped it was because it was unnatural or it was unnormal. It hadn't fit my profile to buy or spend $2,200 in a gun store, right? They were trying to protect me from somebody fucking up my account, and I appreciated it even though it was a little bit inconvenient, right? So when this woman gets a wire transfer of $50,000 and then she subsequently, you know, withdraws $5,000 and then another $8,000 within the span of a few days, it starts to draw a little bit of attention, right? And a lot of folks aren't necessarily aware that there's something called structuring, right? Where like if folks really want, like, it's like a money laundering thing where if you want to launder money, you'll send it to somebody. Like, there's one way to launder money is to like send it to a legitimate account and, you know, have it go through that account and you withdraw the money, and then with money looks as if it came from a legitimate place, right? And so there's also a thing where you have to declare to the IRS if you're transferring or if you are withdrawing amounts of more than $10,000, right? So as it appeared to the bank, it could have been looking at the bank could have been looking at this like, yo, this may be a little bit of money laundering going on. She's at this point withdrawn $13,000 over the course of a week. She's coming in for another $5,000. Maybe this is a money laundering scheme and we should probably get on top of this, right? Now, I get that racism is a thing. I talk about it all the time on my show. But in this particular instance, that isn't the first thing that I think about. I think the bank has some plausible deniability when it comes to racism on this topic. Especially on this issue. I think they have some plausible deniability when it comes to racism charges. I actually, like, while I was, kind of reading into the story and whatnot, I spoke to a friend of mine who's a manager at a bank, and I asked him how often do they freeze accounts for, you know, suspected, you know, fraudulent activity and whatever else. And he told me that at that particular bank that they don't even do that in the branch, or that isn't available to the tellers at a branch level, that they have to send that to a fraud department, and the fraud department is what makes the determination as to whether or not there could be fraud on the account, right? And so you know, I'm just talking about whether or not that was a racist thing to do. I don't believe it was racist. Now, I know a lot of folks got caught up in whether or not, you know, in the fact that she withdrew $13,000 and that she, you know, was talking about her bills being due and stuff like that. And she's wondering how she's going to pay these bills and whatnot. That ain't my business. That ain't y'all's business. Right? At the end of the day, what I believe is that that bank thought that there might have been some fraudulent activity going on in that account, and they froze that account as a result of it. And I didn't necessarily make the leap to it being racism, and that view isn't necessarily popular. And that's why it's the unpopular black opinion of the week this week.
Bitch ass nigga, what you gonna do when a nigga die for you? What you gonna do when I put a nigga out on you?
I gotta say, I think that shit was dope as hell. All right, now we got a little bit of listener feedback to kind of get into. And these are poll results from the last from last week's poll of the this was when I was talking about Jodeci, right? And whether or not you thought I was tripping on whether or not Jodeci had more than 11 hits, right? And so I got the results here. And okay, we got 50%. 50% of respondents to this poll said, I thought I was the only one who thought that Jodeci was a bit overrated, right? 50%, that's a pretty high number. 30% said, I don't really agree, but I can't argue with Span's logic on this one. So almost, I want to say damn near 80% of folks are like, yo, Jodeci might have been kind of like overrated. You know, we look back on them and with nostalgia, but they may have been a little bit overrated. 20% of y'all say what's wrong with this fool. So 20% of y'all think I was tripping, but those are the results from last week's poll, man, on Jodeci. So we got a poll this week as well. And the poll that we have for this week that I want you guys to go to the Span Report and vote on is, do you agree with L. Varner that the anti-slut-shaming movement is sending the wrong impression to young people? Go to this, you know, www.thespanreport.com. Go to episode 115, and you can vote in that poll. You can also comment on that poll. Let me know what you guys are thinking about that. Real talk. I really kind of want to know what you guys are thinking about that particular issue, man. Real talk. But, yeah, man, it's time to get out of here. It's time to get out of here, man. I got some shit to do today, right? I got shit to do today. But before I get out of here, I got to let you guys know how to get in touch with me here at the Span Report. Let your voice be heard again, man. Hit me up at the hotline at area code 313-288-0485. That's area code 313-288-0485. Leave me those voicemail messages, and of course, I'll play them on the show, and I'll respond to them on the show. You can email me at feedback@thespanreport.com. That's feedback@thespanreport.com. Leave me those emails. I'll read those emails and respond in kind. You can also hit me up on Twitter and Instagram. We'll chop it up throughout the week. My name on both of those platforms is Mr_Span, man. Follow me on both of those platforms. Go ahead and like the Mr. Span Facebook fan page as well. I'm going to try to start trying to doing the show on Facebook. I want to do a simulcast on Spreecast and Facebook. So start liking the Mr. Span Facebook fan page. And you'll see the show live right there on Facebook as well, for those of you who only really fuck with Facebook, right? Also, you can go to www.thespanreport.com, listen to the show, watch the videos that I use during the show, vote in the polls, leave comments. You can donate there. All of that stuff is available at thespanreport.com. You can also subscribe to the show on Spreecast, iTunes, and Stitcher Radio. Leave me some 5-star reviews on Stitcher and in iTunes. It's very much appreciated. And those 5-star reviews get read on the show. Shout out to Rod and Karen over at the Black Guy Who Tips. Right? 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 All right, man. Yeah, man, it's time for me to get out of here. It's time for me to get out of here. I got some shit to do. But until next time, fam, peace.